Chapter 2. The Revision and Reenchantment of Psychology. Legacy from a Half-Century of Consciousness Research. Part 4.
Fourth Perinatal Matrix. BPM 4. The Death-Rebirth Experience. This matrix is related to the third clinical stage of delivery, to the final expulsion from the birth canal, and the severing of the umbilical cord. Experiencing this matrix, we complete the preceding difficult process of propulsion through the birth canal, achieve explosive liberation, and emerge into light. This can often be accompanied by concrete and realistic memories of various specific aspects of this stage of birth. These can include the experiences of anesthesia, the pressure of the forceps, and the sensations associated with various obstetric maneuvers or postnatal interventions. Reliving biological birth is not experienced as a simple mechanical replay of the original biological event, but also as a psycho-spiritual death and rebirth. As the fetus is completely confined during the birth process, and has no way of expressing the extreme emotions and reacting to the intense physical sensations involved, the memory of this event remains psychologically undigested and unassimilated. Our self-definition and our attitudes toward the world in our postnatal life are heavily contaminated by this constant reminder of the vulnerability, inadequacy, and weakness that we experience at birth. In a sense, we were born anatomically, but have not caught up with this fact emotionally. The dying and the agony during the struggle for rebirth reflect the actual pain and vital threat of the biological birth process. However, the ego death that precedes rebirth is the death of our old concepts of who we are and what the world is like, which were forged by the traumatic imprint of birth and are maintained by the memory of it that stays alive in our unconscious. As we clear these old programs by letting them emerge into consciousness, they lose their emotional charge and do, in a sense, die. We have identified with them so much, though, that approaching the moment of the ego death feels like the end of our existence, or even like the end of the world. As frightening as this process is, it is actually very healing and transforming. Paradoxically, while only a small step separates us from an experience of radical liberation, we still have a sense of all-pervading anxiety and impending catastrophe of enormous proportions. What actually dies in this process is the false ego that up to this point in our life we have mistaken for our true self. As we lose all the reference points we know, we have no idea what is on the other side, or even if there is anything there at all. This fear tends to create an enormous resistance to continue and complete the experience. As a result, without appropriate guidance, many people can remain psychologically stuck in this problematic territory. When we overcome the metaphysical fear encountered at this important juncture, and decide to let things happen, we experience total annihilation on all imaginable levels: physical destruction, emotional disaster, intellectual and philosophical defeat, ultimate moral failure, and even spiritual damnation. During this experience, all reference points, everything that is important and meaningful in life, seem to be mercilessly destroyed. Immediately following the experience of total annihilation, hitting cosmic bottom, we are overwhelmed by visions of white or golden light, of supernatural radiance and exquisite beauty that appears numinous and divine. Having survived what seemed like an experience of total annihilation and the apocalyptic end of everything, we are blessed only seconds later with fantastic displays of magnificent rainbow spectra, peacock designs, celestial scenes, and visions of archetypal beings bathed in divine light. Often this is the time of a powerful encounter with the archetypal Great Mother Goddess, either in her universal form or in one of her culture-specific forms. Following the experience of psycho-spiritual death and rebirth, we feel redeemed and blessed, experience ecstatic rapture, and have a sense of reclaiming our divine nature and cosmic status. We are overcome by a surge of positive emotions toward ourselves, other people, nature, and existence in general. It is important to emphasize that this kind of healing and life-changing experience occurs when birth was not too debilitating or confounded by heavy anesthesia. If that was the case, we do not have a sense of triumphant emergence into light and radical resolution. Instead, the postnatal period might feel like a slow recovery from a crippling disease or awakening from a hangover. Anesthesia at birth can also have profound adverse psychological consequences for postnatal life and create a disposition for addiction, including a tendency to solve problems in life by escaping into a drug state. Another condition that can obscure the experience of triumphant emergence from the birth canal is Rh incompatibility between the mother and the fetus. When the mother is Rh negative and the father Rh positive, the fetus is treated by the maternal organism as an invader and is subjected from conception to immunological attacks. The strength or titer of the antibodies increases with each pregnancy and can become fatal without radical medical interventions. The immunological pollution of the prenatal state represents a serious challenge in the process of inner exploration. It can involve a number of sessions with extremely unpleasant BPM-1 experiences, general malaise, severe nausea, and vomiting. In this case, reliving birth does not bring clean resolution because the blood of the newborn continues to be poisoned by antibodies. The following account of a death-rebirth experience from a high-dose psychedelic session describes a typical sequence characteristic of BPM-4. However, the worst was yet to come. All of a sudden, I seemed to be losing all my connections to reality, as if some imaginary rug was pulled from under my feet. Everything was collapsing, and I felt that my entire world was shattered to pieces. It was like puncturing a monstrous metaphysical balloon of my existence. A gigantic bubble of ludicrous self-deception had burst open and exposed the lie of my life. Everything that I had ever believed in, everything that I did or pursued, everything that seemed to give my life meaning, suddenly appeared utterly false. These were all pitiful crutches without any substance with which I tried to patch up the intolerable reality of existence. They were now blasted and blown away like the frail feathered seeds of a dandelion, exposing a frightening abyss of ultimate truth, the meaningless chaos of the existential void. Filled with indescribable horror, I saw a gigantic figure of a deity towering over me in a threatening pose. I somehow instinctively recognized that this was the Hindu god Shiva in his destructive aspect. I felt the thunderous impact of his enormous foot that crushed me, shattered me to smithereens, and smeared me like an insignificant piece of excrement all over what I felt was the bottom of the cosmos. In the next moment, I was facing a terrifying giant figure of a dark Indian goddess whom I identified as Kali. My face was being pushed by an irresistible force toward her gaping vagina that was full of what seemed to be menstrual blood or repulsive afterbirth. I sensed that what was demanded of me was absolute surrender to the forces of existence and to the feminine principle represented by the goddess. I had no choice but to kiss and lick her vagina in utmost submission and humility. At this moment, which was the ultimate and final end of any feeling of male supremacy I had ever harbored, I connected with the memory of the moment of my biological birth. My head was emerging from the birth canal, with my mouth in close contact with the bleeding vagina of my mother. In the next moment, I was flooded with a divine light of supernatural radiance and indescribable beauty. Its golden rays were exploding with thousands of exquisite peacock designs. From this brilliant light emerged a figure of the great mother goddess, who seemed to embody love and protection for all ages. She spread her arms and reached toward me, enveloping me into her essence. I merged with this incredible energy field, feeling purged, healed, and nourished. What seemed to be some divine nectar and ambrosia, some archetypal essence of milk and honey, was pouring into me in absolute abundance. Then the figure of the goddess gradually disappeared, absorbed by an even more brilliant light. It was abstract, yet endowed with definite personal characteristics and radiating infinite intelligence. It became clear to me that what I was experiencing was the merging with and absorption into the universal self, or Brahman, as I have read about in books of Indian philosophy. This experience subsided after about 10 minutes. However, it transcended any concept of time and felt like eternity. The flow of the healing and nourishing energy and the visions of golden glow with peacock designs lasted through the night. The resulting sense of heightened well-being stayed with me for days, yet the memory of the experience has remained vivid for years and has profoundly changed my entire life philosophy. The transpersonal domain of the psyche. When we work with holotropic states of consciousness, we have to expand the cartography of the human psyche used by mainstream psychiatrists and psychologists by adding a vast transbiographical domain. The experiences that belong to this category were known in all ancient and Aboriginal cultures and played an important role in their ritual and spiritual life. Modern psychiatrists are familiar with these experiences, but they see them as products of an unknown pathological process rather than genuine and germane constituents of the human psyche. When I amassed sufficient evidence that these experiences are normal manifestations of the deep recesses of the psyche, and parted from the official position of mainstream psychiatry, I coined for them the name transpersonal. This term means literally reaching beyond the personal or transcending the personal. The common denominator in this rich and ramified group of experiences is the realization that our consciousness has expanded beyond the usual boundaries of the body slash ego and has transcended the limitations of linear time and three-dimensional space. In the everyday, normal state of consciousness, we experience ourselves as existing within the boundaries of our physical body, the body image, and our perception of the external world is restricted by the range of our sensory organs, as well as by the physical characteristics of our environment. Our experiences are also clearly defined by the categories of three-dimensional space and linear time. Under ordinary circumstances, we vividly experience only our present situation and our immediate environment. We recall past events and anticipate the future or fantasize about it. In transpersonal experiences, one or several of the above limitations appear to be transcended. The best way to describe transpersonal experiences is to compare them with our everyday experiences of ourselves and the world. In the ordinary state of consciousness, we experience ourselves as material objects separated from the rest of the world by our skin. The British-American writer and philosopher, Alan Watts, referred to this experience of oneself as identifying with the skin-encapsulated ego. We cannot see objects from which we are separated by a solid opaque wall, ships that are beyond the horizon, or the other side of the moon. If we are in Prague, we cannot hear what our friends are talking about in San Francisco. We cannot feel the softness of the lambskin unless the surface of our body is in direct contact with it. In transpersonal states of consciousness, none of the above limitations are absolute. Any of them can be transcended. There are no limits to the spatial reach of our senses. We can experience, with all the sensory qualities, episodes that occurred at any place and any time in the past, and occasionally, even those that have not yet happened. The spectrum of transpersonal experiences is extremely rich and includes phenomena from several different levels of consciousness. In Table 2, I attempted to list and categorize the various types of experiences that, in my opinion, belong to the transpersonal domain. Table 2, Varieties of Transpersonal Experiences. 1. Experiential extension within space-time. 1A. Transcendence of spatial boundaries. Experience of dual unity. Experiential identification with other persons. Experience of group consciousness. Experience of identification with animals. Identification with plants and botanical processes. Identification with life and all creation. Experience of inorganic materials and processes. Experiences of extraterrestrial beings and worlds. Psychic phenomena involving transcendence of space, telepathy, OBEs, astral projection, horizontal clairvoyance. 1B, transcendence of temporal boundaries. Fetal and embryonal experiences. Ancestral experiences, racial and collective experiences, past life experiences, phylogenetic experiences, experiences of the evolution of life, cosmogenetic experiences, psychic phenomena involving transcendence of time, psychometry, vertical clairvoyance, past life reading. 1C, experiential exploration of the micro world, organ and tissue consciousness, cellular consciousness, experience of DNA, experiences of the molecular, atomic, and subatomic worlds. 2. Experiential extension beyond space-time and consensus reality. Energetic phenomena of the subtle body, auras, nadis, chakras, meridians. Experiences of animal spirits, power animals. Encounters with spirit guides and suprahuman beings. Experiences of universal archetypes. Sequences involving specific, blissful, and wrathful deities. Intuitive understanding of universal symbols. Creative inspiration and the Promethean impulse. Experience of the demiurge and insights into cosmic creation. Experience of absolute consciousness. The supracosmic and metacosmic void. 3. Transpersonal experiences of a psychoid nature. 3A. Synchronicities, interplay between intrapsychic experiences and space-time. 3B. Spontaneous psychoid events. Supernormal physical feats. Spiritistic phenomena and physical mediumship. Recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, poltergeist phenomena, UFOs, and alien abduction experiences. 3C, intentional psychokinesis, ceremonial magic, healing and hexing, yogic siddhis, laboratory psychokinesis. In my own psychedelic and holotropic breathwork sessions, I have experienced most of the phenomena that are listed in this synoptic table, and have also repeatedly observed them in my work with others. In the context of this encyclopedia, I will not be able to provide definitions and descriptions of all these types of experiences and illustrate them with clinical examples. For this, I have to refer the interested readers to my previous publications. As the table shows, transpersonal experiences can be divided into three large categories. The first one primarily involves transcendence of the usual spatial and temporal barriers. An experiential extension beyond the spatial limitations of the skin-encapsulated ego leads to experiences of merging with another person into a state that can be called dual unity, assuming the identity of another person, or identifying with the consciousness of an entire group of people. As impossible and absurd as it seems to our rational mind and common sense, we can have an experience of becoming all mothers or children of the world, warriors of all ages, the entire population of India, or the inmates of prisons and concentration camps. Our consciousness can even expand to such an extent that it seems to encompass all of humanity. Descriptions of experiences of this kind can be found in spiritual literature all over the world. In a similar way, we can transcend the limits of the specifically human experience and identify with the consciousness of various animals and plants on the Darwinian evolutionary tree. Becoming an eagle, silverback gorilla, dinosaur, or amoeba a sequoia tree, kelp, or a carnivorous plant. We can even experience a form of consciousness that seems to be related to inorganic objects and processes, such as the consciousness of a diamond, granite, or a burning candle. In the extremes, it is possible to experience consciousness of the biosphere, of our entire planet, or the whole material universe. Incredible as it might seem to a Westerner subscribing to monistic materialism, these experiences suggest that everything we can experience as an object in the everyday state of consciousness has, in the holotropic state of consciousness, a corresponding subjective representation. It is as if everything in the universe has its objective and subjective aspect, as it is described in the great spiritual philosophies of the East. For example, the Hindus see all that exists as a manifestation of Brahman, and the Taoists consider everything in the universe to have been created by transformations of the Tao. Other transpersonal experiences in this first category are characterized primarily by overcoming temporal rather than spatial boundaries, as in the transcendence of linear time. We have already talked about the possibility of reliving important memories from infancy and childhood, and of the memory of biological birth and prenatal existence. According to the materialistic worldview, memories require a material substrate. However, as the temporal regression continues farther back into history, it becomes increasingly difficult to find a believable material medium for these memories. It seems more plausible to see them as involving transcendence of time or some immaterial substrate, such as Laszlo's Akashic Field, Sheldrake's Morphogenetic Field, von Forster's memory without a material substrate, or the field of consciousness itself. It is possible to experience authentic memories from different periods of early embryonic development, and even identification with the sperm and the ovum at the time of conception on the level of cellular consciousness. The process of the experiential retracing of creation does not stop here, though. In holotropic states, we can experience episodes from the lives of our human or animal ancestors, or even those that seem to be coming from the racial and collective unconscious, as described by C.G. Jung. Quite frequently, experiences that seem to be happening in other cultures and historical periods are associated with a sense of personal remembering, a convincing feeling of déjà vu or déjà vécu, something that one has already seen or experienced. People then talk about reliving memories from past lives or from previous incarnations. Experiences in holotropic states can also take us into the micro world, to structures and processes that are ordinarily not accessible to our unaided senses. These can be reminiscent of Isaac Asimov's film Fantastic Voyage, which portrays the world of our inner organs, tissues, and cells, or can even involve full experiential identification with them. Particularly fascinating are experiences of the DNA, which are associated with insights into the ultimate mystery of life, reproduction, and heredity. Occasionally, this type of transpersonal experience can take us into the inorganic world of molecules, atoms, and subatomic particles. The content of transpersonal experiences described so far consists of various phenomena existing in space-time. They involve elements of our everyday familiar reality, other people, animals, plants, materials, and events from the past. As far as these phenomena themselves are concerned, there is nothing here that we would ordinarily consider unusual. They belong to a reality that we know. We accept their existence and take it for granted. What surprises us in regard to the two categories of transpersonal experiences described above is not their content, but the fact that we can witness or fully identify with something that is not ordinarily accessible to our senses. We know that there are pregnant whales in the world, but we should not be able to have an authentic experience of actually being one. We readily accept that there was once the French Revolution, but we should not be able to have a vivid experience of actually being there and lying wounded on the barricades of Paris. We know that there are many things happening in the world, in other places, but it is usually considered impossible to experience something that is happening elsewhere without the mediation of a television camera, satellite, and TV set or computer. We may also be surprised to find consciousness associated with lower animals, plants, and with inorganic nature. The second category of transpersonal phenomena is even stranger. In holotropic states, our consciousness can extend into realms and dimensions that the Western industrial culture does not consider real. Here belong numerous visions of, or identification with, archetypal beings, deities, and demons of various cultures, as well as visits to fantastic mythological realms. They are often drawn from mythologies of which we previously had no intellectual knowledge. We can also achieve an intuitive understanding of universal symbols, such as the cross, the Nile cross or Ankh, the swastika, the pentacle, the six-pointed star, or the yin-yang sign. It is possible to have an encounter and communicate with discarnate and suprahuman entities, spirit guides, extraterrestrial beings, or what appear to be inhabitants of parallel universes. In its farthest reaches, our individual consciousness can transcend all boundaries and identify with cosmic consciousness or the universal mind, also known under many different names: Brahman, Buddha, the cosmic Christ, Keter, Allah, the Tao, the Great Spirit, and many others. The ultimate of all experiences appears to be identification with the supracosmic and metacosmic void, the mysterious and primordial emptiness and nothingness, the cosmic abyss that is the ultimate cradle of all existence. It has no concrete content, yet it contains all there is in a germinal and potential form. It has the intelligence and the immense energy necessary to create universes. The third category of transpersonal experiences comprises phenomena that I call psychoid, using the term coined by Hans Driesch, the founder of vitalism, and adopted by C.G. Jung. This group includes situations in which intrapsychic experiences are associated with corresponding events in the external world that are meaningfully related to them. Psychoid experiences cover a wide range, from synchronicities, spiritual healing, and ceremonial magic, to UFO encounters, psychokinesis, and other mind-over-matter phenomena known from the yogic literature as siddhis. Transpersonal experiences have many strange characteristics that shatter the most fundamental metaphysical assumptions of the materialistic worldview and of the Newtonian Cartesian paradigm. Researchers who have studied and or personally experience these fascinating phenomena realize that the attempts of mainstream science to dismiss them as irrelevant plays of human fantasy or as erratic, hallucinatory products of a diseased brain are naive and inadequate. Any unbiased study of the transpersonal domain of the psyche has to confirm that the phenomena encountered here represent a critical challenge, not only for psychiatry and psychology, but also for the monistic materialistic philosophy of Western science. Although transpersonal experiences occur in the process of deep individual self-exploration, it is not possible to interpret them simply as intrapsychic phenomena in the conventional sense. On the one hand, they appear on the same experiential continuum as the biographical and perinatal experiences, and are thus coming from within the individual psyche. On the other hand, they seem to be tapping directly, without the mediation of the senses, into sources of information that are clearly far beyond the conventional reach of the individual. Somewhere on the perinatal level of the psyche, a strange experiential switch seems to occur. What was, up to that point, deep intrapsychic probing becomes an extrasensory experience of various aspects of the universe at large. Some people who experience this peculiar transition from the inner to the outer compared it with the graphic art of the Dutch painter Maurits Escher, while others talked about a multidimensional experiential Möbius strip. The emerald tablet, Tabula Smaragdina, by Hermes Trismegistus, which became the basic tenet of esoteric systems such as Tantra, Kabbalah, or the Hermetic tradition, confirms these observations with its message. As above, so below, or as without, so within. Each of us is a microcosm containing, in some mysterious way, the entire universe. These observations indicate that we can obtain information about the universe in two radically different ways. The conventional mode of learning is based on sensory perception and analysis, as well as synthesis of the received information. The radical alternative that becomes available in holotropic states is learning by direct experiential identification with various aspects of the world. In the context of old paradigm thinking, the claims of ancient esoteric systems that the micro world can reflect the macro world, or that the part can contain the whole, seem to be utterly absurd, since they seem to offend common sense and violate the elementary principles of Aristotelian logic. This has changed radically after the discovery of the laser, which opened astonishing new ways of understanding the relationship between the part and the whole. The holographic or holonomic thinking has provided, for the first time, a conceptual framework for a scientific approach to this extraordinary phenomenon. The reports from subjects who have experienced episodes of embryonic existence, the moment of conception, and elements of cellular, tissue, and organ consciousness abound with medically accurate insights into the anatomical, physiological, and biochemical aspects of the processes involved. Similarly, ancestral, racial, and collective memories and past incarnation experiences often provide very specific details about architecture, clothing, weapons, art forms, social structure, and religious and ritual practices of the corresponding cultures and historical periods, or even concrete historical events. People who experienced phylogenetic experiences or identification with existing life forms not only found them unusually authentic and convincing, but often acquired extraordinary insights concerning animal psychology, ethology, specific habits, or unusual reproductive cycles. In some instances, this was accompanied by archaic muscular innervations not characteristic for humans, or even such complex behaviors as the enactment of a courtship dance of a particular species. The philosophical challenge associated with the already described observations is further augmented by the fact that the transpersonal experiences reflecting the material world often appear on the same continuum as, and intimately woven with, others which contain elements that the Western industrial world does not consider to be real. This includes experiences involving deities and demons from various cultures, mythological realms such as heavens and paradises, and legendary or fairy tale sequences. We can have an experience, for example, of Shiva's heaven, the paradise of the Aztec rain god Tlaloc, the Sumerian underworld, or one of the Buddhist hot hells. It is also possible to communicate with Jesus, have a shattering encounter with the Hindu goddess Kali, or identify with the dancing Shiva. These episodes can impart accurate new information about religious symbolism and mythological motifs that were previously unknown to the person involved. Observations of this kind confirm C.G. Jung's idea that besides the Freudian individual unconscious, we can also gain access to the collective unconscious that contains the cultural heritage of all humanity. The general concept of the great chain of being, according to which reality includes an entire hierarchy or holarchy of dimensions that are ordinarily hidden to our perception, is very important and well-founded. It would be erroneous to dismiss this understanding of existence as primitive superstition or psychotic delusion, as has so frequently been done. Anybody attempting to do that would have to offer a plausible explanation for why the experiences that systematically support this elaborate and comprehensive vision of reality have occurred so consistently in people of various races, cultures, and historical periods. Anybody trying to defend the monistic, materialistic position of Western science would also have to account for the fact that these experiences continue to emerge in highly intelligent, sophisticated, and otherwise mentally healthy people of our era. This happens not only under the influence of psychedelics, but also under such diverse circumstances as sessions of various forms of experiential psychotherapy, meditations of people involved in systematic spiritual practice, in near-death experiences, and in the course of spontaneous episodes of psycho-spiritual crises, spiritual emergencies. It is not an easy task to summarize, in a few pages, conclusions from observations amassed in the course of more than 60 years of research of holotropic states, and make those statements believable. Although I had the opportunity to hear the accounts of transpersonal experiences from thousands of people, and had many of them myself, it took me years to fully absorb the impact of the cognitive shock that the discovery of their existence imparted on me. Due to space considerations, I am not able to present detailed case histories that could help illustrate the nature of transpersonal experiences and the insights they provide. However, I doubt that even that, in and of itself, would suffice to counteract the deeply ingrained programs that Western science has instilled into our culture. The conceptual challenges that are involved are so formidable that nothing short of a deep personal experience would be adequate for this task. The existence and nature of transpersonal experiences violate some of the most basic assumptions of mechanistic science. They imply such seemingly absurd notions as relativity and the arbitrary nature of all physical boundaries, non-local connections in the universe, communication through unknown means and channels, memory without a material substrate, non-linearity of time, and consciousness associated with all living organisms, even including inorganic matter. Many transpersonal experiences involve events from the microcosm and the macrocosm, realms that cannot normally be reached by unaided human senses, or from historical periods that precede the origin of the solar system, the formation of planet Earth, the appearance of living organisms, the development of the nervous system, or the emergence of Homo sapiens. The study of transpersonal experiences reveals a remarkable paradox concerning the nature of human beings. Observed in the everyday, hylotropic or oriented toward matter state of consciousness, we appear to be separate Newtonian objects existing in three-dimensional space and in linear time. In a holotropic state, we function as infinite fields of consciousness transcending space and time. This complementary nature of human beings seems to have a distant analog in the wave-particle nature of light described by the complementarity principle of the Danish physicist Niels Bohr. It is interesting that Bohr believed that the principle of complementarity will eventually be relevant for other scientific disciplines. Similar paradoxical statements can be found in esoteric systems and mystical traditions. The human being is a microcosm containing the macrocosm, and as above, so below, as without, so within. Similar, seemingly absurd pronouncements have been made by mystics about separation and oneness, or identity and difference. We know we are separate from each other, but we are all one, and we know we are just insignificant parts of the universe, but each of us is the entire universe. Optical holography and the mystical worldview. An unexpected scientific explanation and clarification of these paradoxes was made possible in the 1960s by the development of optical holography. The understanding of the holographic principles is so important for transpersonal psychology and psychonautics that it deserves a separate section in this encyclopedia. As absurd and implausible as these ideas might appear to a traditionally trained scientist and to our common sense, they can be relatively easy to reconcile in the context of the new revolutionary developments in various scientific disciplines, which is usually referred to as the new or emerging paradigm. The mathematics underlying holography was developed by Denis Gabor, a Hungarian electrical engineer living in Great Britain. His original intention was to improve the resolution of the electronic microscope. Initially, it was not possible to create optical holograms because a coherent source of light had yet to be developed. In 1961, when the laser was invented in Malibu, California, Gabor's holographic principles could be used for creating optical holograms. An optical hologram requires a laser, light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation, a source of monochromatic and coherent light. Monochromatic light means that all light rays are of the same wavelength or frequency, which is the reciprocal value of wavelength. Coherent light means that all light emitted by the laser is in phase. A hologram thus needs a source of laser light, a film plate, and the object from which you are making the hologram. The laser beam is directed toward a glass pane, beam splitter, that is partially silver plated, so that half of the beam is reflected from it and the other half penetrates through it, the same principle as the one-way screen. This is done in such a way that the reflected half of light is directed toward the object that is being photographed, and then from it to the film plate, the working beam. The second half that penetrates through the glass, the reference beam, is reflected by mirrors and spread by the beam spreader over the film plate, where it meets the light carrying the image of the object. What occurs is called interference. The way to visualize interference is to imagine a pond as several pebbles are thrown into it. The concentric waves that it creates, Huygens waves, travel, and as they meet, they interact with each other. Two crests meeting each other would create a bigger crest. Two crests of opposite direction would cancel each other. Two troughs would create a deeper trough, etc. In the world of light, the amplitude of the light waves determines the intensity of the light. The larger the amplitude, the lighter those points in the hologram will be. The interference is then recorded in the film plate, and the film is developed. This creates a hologram. In traditional photography, we can tell from the negative what was photographed: trees, houses, people, etc. This is not possible when we work with holograms. No matter what objects are being photographed, all holograms look alike. They are large-scale interference patterns, Moiré patterns. But if the hologram is illumined by a laser, it recreates the wavefront and produces a three-dimensional image of the object that was photographed. If we observe the image through the plate, we can see it from different angles, but only in a limited range. It is also possible to make a hologram of a hologram, which is called a projection hologram. When a projection hologram is illumined by laser light, the resulting image appears to be floating freely in the air on the other side of the film plate. It is then possible to walk around it and watch it from a very wide range of angles, with the exception of the position that would block the stream of the laser light. When we observe a projection hologram from different angles, we experience a parallax, that is, the apparent displacement of the observed object due to the change in our position. If the person on the hologram has glasses, we would see in them different reflections, replicating what they looked like in the original situation. If the person has a diamond ring, it would be changing the colors of its facets depending on which direction we looked at it. Why would optical holography be of such interest for transpersonal psychologists? As we will see, we can use it to model visionary states and clarify some paradoxical statements from mystics. For example, holograms have enormous storage capacity. In conventional photography, we can store only one picture per frame, unless we are superimposing images for some artistic effect. In a single hologram, we can store a large number of images. This can be done in two different ways. In the first one, we can change the angle of the laser with each of the objects we are photographing. When we develop the film and keep illuminating it with the laser, replicating the angles of the original exposure, each angle will tease out from the common matrix the image of the object that was photographed from that angle. The information about all of them would be in the hologram. But to actually see them, we would have to illuminate the hologram from the same angle that was used to create it. The other way is to create the hologram in such a way that we use the same angle during sequential exposures of these objects. When we then illumine the resulting hologram, all of the photographed objects will appear simultaneously and occupy the same place. In the 1970s, when I was very interested in holography, I spent some time in Honolulu in the holographic laboratory at the University of Hawaii. In this lab, they created a hologram which was called the Child of Hawaii. They did it through the sequential exposure of a number of Hawaiian children without changing the angle of the laser. So the final hologram was occupying the space that is normally taken by one child, but the information about all the children was in it. As one looked at it, it seemed that different faces were emerging from it, one after another, and sometimes more than one at a time. Another fascinating property of holograms is that the information is distributed in them in such a way that it can be retrieved from each of their parts. If we had a conventional photograph and cut it in two pieces, we would lose half of the information. A hologram can be cut into a large number of little pieces, and by illuminating each of the fragments with a laser, we can retrieve from it the information about the entire object. We will lose some of the resolution power, but still obtain the image of the whole. The mechanisms that I just described can be used in a very interesting way in order to mimic the experiences in holotropic states. In one of the demonstrations of the hologram, I was sitting in a dark room and they projected sequentially holographic images of a number of people photographed with different angles of the laser. As the person who was illuminating this hologram was changing the angle of the laser, I could see one face after another emerging from darkness, disappearing, and being replaced by another, very much like the visions in psychedelic or holotropic breathwork sessions. In another demonstration, they would illumine the hologram of a number of people photographed with the same angle of the laser, like the Child of Hawaii. I would see all of them in the space normally occupied by one. As I was looking at this composite hologram, I was seeing different faces in that same space. This mimicked another very interesting experience in holotropic states. For example, when I was having a psychedelic session and Christina was sitting for me, I would see her at one point as all women. For a moment, she seemed to be a lovely young girl. And then in the next moment, she turned into a very old craggy crone. At one point, she looked like a Polynesian beauty, and then she transformed into a medieval witch. She was like an archetypal woman, with all possible manifestations of femininity appearing in the space that is usually occupied by just one body. The Hawaiian lab I was visiting offered to make newlyweds a wedding hologram as a gift. The couple could actually choose how they wanted this to be done. They could choose a more conventional hologram showing them as two persons, a bridegroom and a bride. That means that they would stand in front of the plate and there would be just one exposure. The other possibility was a hologram that would show them in a kind of tantric fusion. They would see one body, but the images of both the bride and the bridegroom would be contained in it. This would be achieved by two sequential exposures without changing the angle of the laser. The hologram showing the bridal couple as two separate objects can be used to illustrate a very interesting aspect of holograms. Let us imagine that we have in front of us the projection variety of this hologram. A well-made hologram could fool not only a child who had never seen a hologram, but also an educated adult who does not have the necessary technical information. They would perceive the situation as two persons, two separate Newtonian objects. What we know about holography, however, is that the holographic images cannot exist on their own. To make a hologram, one has to have a laser source, something that gives the inflection to the light, in this case the holographic plate, and the undifferentiated field of light filling the space. The semblance of two separate objects is created by the interference patterns of light. It is a play of lights and shadows, in which the brightness of various points is reflecting the amplitude of light resulting from the interference. Quantum relativistic physicist David Bohm, struggling with the paradoxes and challenges of this discipline, created a holographic model of the universe. According to him, the material world we experience in our usual state of consciousness is a complex holographic system, explicate or unfolded order. Its creative matrix is in another dimension of reality that is not perceptible to our physical senses in our everyday state of consciousness, the implicate or enfolded order. In the example of the bridal hologram, we saw that perceiving it as two separate autonomous objects would be a naive and false perception. David Bohm, like Albert Einstein, would say the same about our perception of the material world. It does not require any intelligence to see the world as made of separate Newtonian objects. But to discover that this is ultimately a naive and false pedestrian perception, like the Hindu Maya, and realize that on a deeper level, it is an undifferentiated whole, requires quantum relativistic physics, White Hedian philosophy, or a holotropic state of consciousness. Why is optical holography such a useful model for illustrating certain important aspects of the mystical worldview? First of all, the basic tenet of many esoteric teachings, from the Emerald Tablet of Hermes Trismegistus to Tantra, Kabbalah, and Gnosticism, is that each individual is a microcosm that contains the entire macrocosm. As above, so below. As without, so within. This does not seem to make any sense. One has to make a decision. You have to be a part or the whole. Aristotelian logic asserts you cannot be something and at the same time something else. However, in holography, this is not the case. If we are interested only in what we can measure and weigh, which is what science does since Galileo requested it, then a hundredth of a hologram is an insignificant part of it. But if we are not interested in what the part of the hologram weighs or measures, but in the information that it provides, 1/100th of the hologram can provide adequate information about the whole. Similarly, each of us is an insignificant part of the universe, but we can experientially identify with any of its components, and in that sense, we are commensurate with it. In that case, the information about the whole can be contained in each of its parts. In the same vein, we can look at another statement mystics make. I know that you and I are separate from each other, but from another perspective, you and I are one. If we look again at the holographic model, we realize that seeing the two images as being part of a deeper, undivided, unified system is a more sophisticated perspective. And we can also see that these two statements are complementary. They are not mutually exclusive. Psychonautics is ultimately about information, not about material things. In holotropic states, we can, for example, experientially identify with members of other species. If I experience myself as an elephant, I will have information about what it feels like to be an elephant. I will have a very convincing sense that I have become an elephant, which will go way beyond anything I have ever learned about elephants. This does not mean that when you put me on a scale, I will weigh 3 tons. This has nothing to do with the material aspect of the phenomena we are dealing with. We are talking about information about those phenomena. In that sense, one can be both part and the whole. One can be separate and be one at the same time. You can have a form and no form at the same time. Even exist and not exist at the same time. Holography provides a very elegant way of solving some of the seeming paradoxes or even absurdities that we read about in mystical literature. We have now gone through the extended cartography of the psyche, which is absolutely essential for anyone who gets involved in serious psychonautics and holotropic states for purposes such as self-exploration, the spiritual quest, therapeutic work, artistic inspiration, scientific curiosity, or the cultivation of intuition and extrasensory perception. As I will try to demonstrate in future chapters of this book, the expanded cartography outlined previously is also of critical importance for any serious approach to such phenomena as shamanism, rites of passage, mysticism, religion, mythology, parapsychology, near-death experiences, and psychedelic states. This new model of the psyche is not just a matter of academic interest. It has important, revolutionary implications for the understanding of emotional and psychosomatic disorders, including many conditions currently diagnosed as psychotic, and offers new and revolutionary therapeutic possibilities.